This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, welcome in. It is a Friday here on VSiN, the sports betting network. You see me. It's Jonathan Von Tobel flying solo for the day. Stormy Bonatoni out on the road. She will be on the sideline for Cal and Duke this coming weekend. I believe the third time that good old Storm has had the Cal Golden Bears. We will not hear from her. She is allegedly meeting with Manny Diaz and the Duke Blue Devils at some time in the near future. We will see if we get anything good. Hopefully, maybe she'll send us some nuggets before we get off the air for this contest from the Duke Blue Devils. But very much looking forward to the weekend that is in football, both on the pitch, across the pond, and, of course, stateside with college and the pros. So let's get right to it and not waste any time.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
Another week and another edition of the Market Power Ratings. Things change, things move, and we do have a new lowest power-rated team in the National Football League. It's something we've discussed at length here, and I don't think it would shock anybody to find out that the Tennessee Titans are, by the market standards, the worst team in the NFL. We'll get into the details of why that is the case when we get to our market power ratings coming up in about 45 minutes from now. All about the little guy, though, today, as we have four, count them, four non-power matchups tonight in conference play, including two matchups near and dear to my heart. We get two Mountain West Conference games tonight. Looking forward to breaking those down. San Jose State taking on New Mexico, and San Diego State looking to put the dagger in the side of Jay Norvell and the Colorado State Rams. But speaking of that animal, we start with Thursday Night Football last night because, boy, oh, boy, Rams to the slaughter. And it was one, both on the field for the Los Angeles Rams, who have now lost two out of the last three, and for Survivor players last night. It's actually a pretty good thing that Stormy Bonatoni is not in today, because I think she probably, with her very strong hand, strangled me to death after I convinced her to pull the trigger on the Los Angeles Rams last night against her beloved San Francisco 49ers. But that's where we start. 26-23, 49ers get the win in overtime over the Los Angeles Rams. I tend to shy away from, and this is, I think, one of Stormy's strengths, because she's a sideline reporter, the narrative of things when it comes to events like this. It's hard to ignore the narrative of Mac Jones, though, performing in that game. Beat to hell, eating bananas on the sideline, the knee injury, everything that he'd been dealing with, and yet he still goes out there and deals 33 of 49, just over 340 yards, 342 to be precise, and two touchdowns, leading the 49ers to a victory into a 4-1 start. And the 49ers just continue to truck along with this pretty strong record, obviously not only in control of the NFC West, but also with a chance potentially of being a one seed in the NFC. We will see, of course, over the large sample size, if they can keep this going. And I think, look, we're five games into this experiment right now, that experiment being the 2025 NFL season. I don't think from a power rating standpoint you would find anybody that would rank the 49ers among the top five teams, maybe not even the top 10 teams in the National Football League, but from a record standpoint, they are there. We will see what happens with them. But before we get to the 49er side of things, because we'll hear from Mac Jones coming up in 5 minutes, let's hear from the Los Angeles Rams, because out of all of the things that happened last night, I don't think there's any mistake in the fact that this Rams team shot themselves in the foot, nearly plus two on a yards per play basis. Multiple turnovers, though, in the game, including in the red zone. Missed opportunities on special teams as well. But it all came down to a fourth and short for L.A. at the end of this game, in which they elected to just run Kyren Williams off tackle as opposed to give it to Matthew Stafford, who had been averaging over 8 yards per attempt, had been wheeling and dealing, had been absolutely fantastic. Here's both Sean McVay and Stafford on what the final play entailed.
Thought about maybe trying to draw them off sides. I took one, they took the other, and it was a poor decision by me right there. But, you know, you give the Niners credit. But there's a lot of things that we have to be able to clean up, and a lot of football left. But I'm pretty sick right now. I'm sick of the spot that I put our group in to end the game. But, hey, these are the tough beats that you got to be able to learn from and move forward. And that's what we're going to do.
That's a bread and butter short yardage call for us. So I didn't have any problem with it. That's trusting our guys to go out there and make a play. They did a nice job of stopping it. Frustrating that we didn't get it. Wish I would have done more and found a way to help us win.
This is a Rams team that you could very much argue should be 5-0 considering what the two losses entailed. Again, when you look at the statistics for this matchup against the 49ers, of gaining them 456, giving up 400 yards. We'll get to that momentarily. 7.1 yards per play to 4.9 for the Los Angeles Rams. You just can't do what you're doing here. By the way, you held the 49ers to under 3 yards per carry. They averaged just 2.2 yards per rush, and yet you found yourself in this position where you couldn't get the victory. And then you go back 2 weeks ago when they lose to the Philadelphia Eagles the way that they do, blowing that game, getting outscored 12-0 in the fourth quarter. And, of course, we all know how that ends. Rams in the middle of two brutal betting moments so far this early NFL season, and we're over a quarter of the way through it. But you have the ridiculous beat against the Philadelphia Eagles 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then you have last night losing this game, even though all statistical indicators would say that you should have won this. And from a survivor standpoint, a lot of projections floating in the range of about maybe 2,300 entries potentially on the Los Angeles Rams yesterday. We talked to a couple of people that had shoved their entries in on the LA Rams. So this was the first real slaughter, if you will, that we have seen in Survivor. How about this at the Westgate Superbook 2? We had a couple of these, including their own Survivor, 26 of 80 entries on the Rams on Thursday. That's 32% of the field over there getting knocked out in a single result. So we'll see what the bloodbath is like here when the deadline passes and the contest show with Matt Brown and Samich are going to be there. I am very curious to see how many ultimately use the Rams, given the injuries that's going to be there. And I'll say this. I saw a lot yesterday of the, that's why you don't use a Thursday game. We got to stop with that, okay? The results-based thinking drives me nuts. Folks, Buffalo was a popular play 2 weeks ago with the Miami Dolphins, and they got it done. We got to stop with the, hey, man, this just happened, so this has to be true sort of deal. It's not a Thursday night thing. This Rams squad completely screwed the pooch in this regard. So as we spin this forward, I think the San Francisco aspect of this is pretty interesting. We obviously have a team that is 4-1. A team that is the favorite to win their division, given the failings of the team that is behind them in the Los Angeles Rams. Seahawks could, of course, still be competitive. The Rams can still win the division. We're not going to throw any dirt on them at this point, just 5 games into the season. But what becomes, I think, a fascinating aspect of this 49ers team is what's going to happen at the quarterback position. Brock Purdy, of course, has his turf toe that he's been dealing with that has kept him out 2 games so far, and that has, I think, hampered his ability to play the game. After the game last night, Mac Jones was asked, do you feel like you are the starting quarterback for the 49ers?
I think, you know, they brought me here to play as a backup, and that's my job. And Brock's the starter of this team, and right now he's dealing with something. And for him to go out there last week and play when, you know, he probably wasn't a full health, like, he cares about this team. So I'm just trying to get some wins for him so it helps us down the line. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Like, I've been in his position. I've been a starter, and you want your backup to go in there and win, because at the end of the season that could be the hit or miss between a playoff or not. So
Mac Jones is a starter. He's completed 66% of his passes, averaged 7 yards per attempt, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. And the more important metric, even though it's not a statistic, quarterback wins. He is 3-0 as a starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. So San Fran gets some time to rest and get ready, see if some of these bodies can make their way back at this point right now. They will play again on October 12th against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the road. Bucks will take on another NFC West opponent this weekend against the Seattle Seahawks. Have to mention as well, this is one aspect that we had brought up in the offseason quite a bit, where Stormy and I both pretty high on this 49ers team. I still have this ticket that is somehow still alive on them to be the number one seed in the NFC. But the thought of Kyle Shanahan being coach of the year this year, if this team was going to succeed, that is a massive feather in the cap for Shanahan to win coach of the year with that performance. Right now, he is 9-1. He's the third choice behind Shane Steichen, who is the favorite at plus 450. These numbers courtesy of DraftKings. Liam Cohen at plus 650. And then you get Kyle Shanahan at 9-1. If there was a moment that you can point to that you could say, hey, this is it. This is a coaching job that is damn near perfect and got his way, or excuse me, should be one of the big points of evidence to win coach of the year, it would be last night against the Los Angeles Rams. And I think you can make the argument through 5 games. It is not Shane Steichen, even though he's done a great job, or Liam Cohen to be the favorite, but it's Shanahan, considering the injuries that this team has had to deal with and the victories that they have pulled off up to this point. And on the flip side, we look at the Los Angeles Rams, which I think is going to be interesting moving forward. You could make the argument that they should be 5-0 because of the two losses they faced. You could also make the argument they should have lost that game against the Indianapolis Colts with 2 touchdowns taken off the board by the Colts' own foolishness. And look at this team in a completely different light, potentially at 2-3, and a defense that, against some better opponents, has somewhat failed in what they've been asked to do. And this is going to be the storyline, I think, for LA moving forward. I do like their front seven, especially their defensive line. It's hard not to like what you see from that group overall. But you even go back to that game against the Indianapolis Colts, gave up 6 yards per play, 333 total yards. And again, two touchdowns called back for Indy, which ultimately was a difference in a 27-20 victory. LA does have some things to work out with this team defensively as we move forward. All right, we'll get more on the National Football League and these two teams. Did want to note a couple of injury bits of news that have come out here in the last few hours or so. If you've been driving around under a rock, working the important things in life and having to deal with those sort of things. But we did get official wording on what's going to happen with the Minnesota Vikings against the Cleveland Browns. I don't think it's really a surprise. J.J. McCarthy officially ruled out, along, though, with guard Donovan Jackson, center Ryan Kelly, tackle Brian O'Neill, guard Michael Juergens, and then on the defensive side, Andrew Van Ginkel is going to be out on Sunday as well. This looks like it is going to be one of the worst games you might ever see in your life out in England. And right now, as it stands for the Minnesota Vikings, current numbers across the board with a low total well under 36.5. We're at 35.5. Spread still sitting at 3.5. But we're getting some clarity as to where we're at. And that 30.5 that I reference is over here at Circa. But this one is going to be nasty. And Carson Wentz, behind an offensive line that's missing three starters, is going to have to find a way to deal with this front seven and this pass rush out there in foreign territory. And this looks like it's going to be, even at the total right now, you can make the argument that this game should be under. All right, we'll get some more information. We had a litany of Ravens that were listed out at practice today. So it sounds like not only is Lamar Jackson going to be on the mend this weekend, but also four or five of his teammates, especially on the defensive side. Ravens look very thin. We'll tell you who that is. But on the other side, the man, the myth, the legend, and Mike Palm. He will join us, get his thoughts on what the WNBA Finals have in store for us and more when we return here on Money Moves.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, back here on Money Moves. Stormy Bonatoni off for the day. She is out gallivanting. She will be, of course, on the sideline for Cal and Duke. Very good game. And we are excited, me, the producers in the back, to have Mike Palm in studio as we get ready for a wild weekend. There's a lot to get to, Mike, but actually I wanted to start with the WNBA. You've been fantastic on it in your time with us. And we have a very good and intriguing series coming up here with Phoenix taking on Las Vegas. Right now, Aces, 3.5-point favorite, 3 here, total of 162. Before we get to the game tonight, and it ties into just the series as a whole, but they're $1.35 favorite, the Aces are, to win this series. You have said this Mercury team's good. What do you make of this series price and where it's at?
I'm disappointed in it because my buy point on the Mercury is plus 140, and I was hoping the Aces would open 160 or heavier. Didn't happen. Open 130, bet up a little bit. Consensus now about 135. So I passed at this point. I'm going to take the shot that Las Vegas wins in game one and see if I can get close to plus $2 on the Mercury or maybe $1.80 after they lose game one. I don't know how much the market will adjust. I think this Phoenix team is very, very good. Yeah. I think they're deeper than the Aces. Asia has to be superwoman almost every night for this team. And I think the Mercury, you know, as Satu Sabali goes, so they go. I mean, if she, you know, there's sometimes she disappears in games. But I think she's a really key weapon from the outside and driving the lane. Kalea Copper stretches the floor for them. They can bring the three-point shooters off the bench. I think they're every bit as good as the Aces. Aces have home court. So I make it a toss-up series. So we'll see how it goes. Obviously, if Phoenix wins game one, the series price is going to shift, and I'll probably pass and just look to bet individual games.
So for the Aces, I think it's pretty safe to say they win Asia MVP. I don't think it's really any other universe, right?
I don't know who else it could be.
Right.
She's going to have 25-plus and 12-plus rebounds and there's no one else on the Aces, really. I mean, somebody might have a 20-point game, but there's not going to be somebody that has three 20-point games.
Yeah.
And the offense is all going to flow through her.
And she'll get defensive credit from the media, so I think that, and rightfully so, because she's very good defensively. What do we make of the Mercury? I always do that. With the Mercury, are there multiple candidates here to win MVP, potentially?
Well, Alyssa Thomas is probably the obvious choice.
Second choice plus 170 at some spot.
I think Sabali could be, depending on how she plays. She's that dynamic of a player. I don't think Copper can. because I think the two stars will outshine her. So if you're looking for a price, maybe you look at Sobley.
Okay. Now, before we move off of this, I like these sort of topics, and we won't spend a lot of time because I don't want to get in trouble with our big bosses. But I thought what transpired this week with the Feast of Collier was very, very interesting, very big. You never really see that. For those who are really familiar with it, the Feast of Collier has her press conference. I think it was exit interviews, if I remember correctly, and had a four-minute statement essentially destroying Kathy Engelbert and the way she's handled this thing as the WNBA commissioner. So what did you make of what she was doing? Because we should throw out the caveat. Nafisa Collier, is it unfair? She does have her own league. There is like a little bit of that cloudiness.
But you know, the players have equity in that league.
Yeah.
So it's not like she owns 50% of it. Stewart, all the players that play in it have equity.
Okay.
Right? And Collier's husband is the president of the league. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, and she's the vice president of the players' union. So part of this is something to do with the CBA negotiations, and they're very frustrated. They're in a tough spot because, you know, the owners offered 4X on all salaries, right? Basically, the minimum goes from 70 to 250, and the max goes from 250 to a million, and they want more roster spots. Anyhow, I would say what Collier's statement was well orchestrated. Mm-hmm. She weaponized the fan bases of all the key young players.
Yep.
And all the diverse.
I thought it was brilliant.
The diverse fan base. The Caitlin Clark, obviously, that huge fan base. But she also mentions Paige Beckers, and she also mentions Angel Reese. Yep. Specifically. And then, of course, revealing the private conversation of Kathy Engelbert about, you know, these players owe everything. And the ludicrous statement, if this was her statement, that Caitlin Clark should get down on her knees because she wouldn't make any money if not for the WNBA. Sure. She made $8 million in NIL because she took an Iowa team that was not heard of in the college basketball women's landscape and took them to the finals twice,
right,
including beating a South Carolina team that hadn't lost in 3 years along the way and beating a UConn and beating a LSU, right? That was where she got all her fame, the leading scorer of all time. She would have had the assist record if she'd have stayed and played her COVID year. So I don't know how she survives this. Now, she always speaks before the finals game one. Part of Christine Brennan's talk about how unprepared the league was and why they don't want to promote Caitlin was last year, game one, Liberty and Lynx. Kathy Engelbert spoke for 30 minutes, named all these different players, never said Caitlin Clark once, right? And when Brennan reached out to her and said, why would you not mention Caitlin Clark? She said, well, I only spoke about players that were playing in the series. Not true. She mentioned all kinds of different players in the league. So I guess if Collier's statement is true and the quotes are true, it speaks to the way why she would never acknowledge Caitlin. It's not a one-person league. I mean, and we've talked about it. I don't know who ultimately makes the decision, John. Is it the NBA owners, mm-hmm, who own a lot of these teams? Is it David Stern? Is it Adam Silver? Right. Is it who has to get together to make the decision? And do they want to change leadership in the middle of the negotiations? I don't know. But it will be interesting. It will be interesting what Engelbert has to say tonight. She certainly, her statement she released, right, all she does is hand out fines and issue statements, left a lot to be desired. And now you have all these mainstream media people who don't really pay any attention to this sport really calling for her resignation or calling for her to make changes. I thought also interesting this week, which went under the radar, is Gino Auriemma comes out and says, you know, about the officiating and how bad the officiating is. He, mm-hmm, says, you know, Paige came back and told us she had to learn from her time here how to play defense without fouling, because that's what's stressed in the women's college game. And she had to forget all that because in the NBA, WNBA, you have to play defense while fouling because they don't call it.
Yeah. So that's incredible. Yeah. All right. I can't wait to see what the result of all this is going to be. But let's move on. Last night, Los Angeles Rams, San Francisco 49ers, our money moves entry, along with sounds like many others, goes down in flames. So the numbers will officially be unveiled on Saturday.
Yeah,
can you give us a tidbit of like maybe what that looked like?
I think the range was like people predicted 10 to 30%. And, you know, I don't want to say too much because it maybe affects people, how they play this out, especially in Grandissimo. But obviously it was a very significant game for both pools. We sat here in a long text conversation with our risk guys when the injury report came out, you know, and we were still at 7, you know, minus 120, and we're getting pounded. What's the next move? And it's like 7.5 is not enough. It's to 8.5, yeah, right, to get buyback. And it even got to 9.
Yep.
And then we got the buyback at 9. So we sold off a lot of the money that steamed in on the Niners before we really knew all the injury information. The game was a pretty incredible game. It's not Sean McVay's best day, is it?
No.
Team totally unprepared in the first half. I don't know what their defensive game plan was to play soft. against Mac Jones and a receiver core that's all backups?
And a running back that can catch out of the backfield?
You're like, what was that game plan? I don't really understand it. Of course, if you don't fumble at the one-yard line, you're going to win the game. Mm-hmm. The Survivor people had to be ecstatic he went on fourth and when he kicks the field goal, they're out anyhow.
Yep, 100%.
The game ends as a tie after one possession each, right?
Yep.
They can't win, so they're ecstatic he goes. But again, it stuns me in both college and pro football, the lack of creativity on fourth and one.
Well, so you know what drives me nuts? So they have the Amazon has the all 22 mm-hmm. footage. I don't know if you saw the all 22, so the angle of it. So he runs kind of, they run off like right tackle essentially. Yep. But on the right side, they have a tight end, they have Puka Nacua, and they have one more receiver at the lead point blocking on a key fourth and one. Yeah. That, to me, is also what drove me nuts. You have Matthew Stafford, who is destroying this defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's throwing it wherever he wants. He's averaging over 8 yards. And you run off tackle with Puka Nacua and another wide receiver and a smallish tight end being one of your lead points of attack. That, to me, is what drove me insane.
I thought they were going to run the ball there only because they lost the game in Philadelphia and they wouldn't run the ball on third and one and third and two and kept punting to Philadelphia in the second half. And I think that was in his head that we can just run and I've forgotten how to run the football. And so I thought they were going to call a run play. Not that basic.
Yeah.
I thought there'd be some misdirection to it.
Yep. All right. So as we look forward to the weekend, we do have some pretty big favorites. It's an interesting – I thought it was a really interesting Survivor weekend, though, because the Lions will play. They are a holiday team as well.
I don't like them on a holiday, though. I don't love them against the Packers.
They get the Packers and they're both, right? They get the Packers and the Vikings on whichever Christmas and Thanksgiving. I don't remember which order.
First Thanksgiving and Christmas, Packers, Vikings. Yeah. I think you save Philadelphia for Black Friday.
That was our goal. My bullet was Philly Friday against the Bears.
I think that's the clear choice.
Yep.
Kansas City, I don't know. They're on the road. It's on a short week. The road teams are in a tough on Thursdays. So I think the Lions are live, very live for this week.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. All right, so last minute with you. Anything college? There's a big college weekend. Like anything?
I mean, Matt Campbell's supposed to win this game, and the whole world loves Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Iowa State, if they're a legitimate playoff team, needs to go and win this game. I don't think I laid the points with Penn State. This UCLA team is terrible. I want to talk baseball just very briefly.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's so much going on. Yeah,
There's so much going on here. I think if you like the Cubs, wait till they lose game one. Everything's against them in game one. They've used the bullpen up. Peralta's going. They're probably going to go Colin Ray in a bullpen game. If you like the Cubs, I'm surprised that was a pick 'em. And then the other thing is I think it's really interesting in this Dodgers-Philly series what Davey Roberts decides to do in game two on Monday. Mm-hmm. Is he going to stick with the three-man rotation? Because he can come back with Snell on 5 days rest. And then Yamamoto on 6 days rest. Or does he play out Glasnow, pitch Glasnow? I asked everybody in mid-August, what's the Dodgers starting rotation in the playoffs? Everybody but me and Jensen said Glasnow number one. He's not even in the starting rotation. I was lobbying for Yamamoto.
Mike,
by the way, has made 7 great starts in a row.
Yes.
Yamamoto.
Thanks for swinging by. Really appreciate it. Mike Palm, as usual. We'll come back. Not the Will Hill. And William Hill is going to join us next here on Money Moves.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, let's welcome in our next guest. This is the best part about Fridays, right? It's not. We have so many smart people throughout the week. We have a ton of them here on a Friday. Big thanks to Mike Palm, who is just with us, covered all the bases, if you will, including ending with a little bit of baseball. So let's head out and welcome in Will Hill on the Progressive Guest Line. Follow him up on X at Not The Will Hill. Will, it's always good to talk to you, buddy. So let's dive right in. And let's go with the National Football League. Your Minnesota Vikings let me down last weekend. Got their faces kicked in by the Steelers and did not look great for that offense or that defense. Now we're coming back, getting a rookie, making his first start with this Cleveland Browns team. But you're missing a ton of pieces on this offensive line. What do we make of what we're going to see this weekend in England?
JVT, what's going on, man? Yeah, this is the Sunday morning game. Might not be a bad game to sleep in if you're on the West Coast where you are. I don't think we get many points, I should say. I like the under. I think there's still some 36 around. Again, when you're dealing with this low of a total, make sure you get every half a point. From the Minnesota standpoint, you just have so many cluster injuries on the offensive line with O'Neal and the left guard and the right tackle and the center and maybe the backup center. That's a recipe for disaster. With Wentz at quarterback, plus playing a really good Browns defensive line. And then on the other side of the ball, I mean, it's Gabriel going against the Flores defense. So I think both coaches, both teams go and say, you know what, if we don't turn it over, which, you know, can undo an under, if defensive touchdowns, things like that. as long as we don't turn it over and we protect the ball, we can be conservative, run the ball, we'll just try to win the game, 13-10 or something like that. I think this could be a really, really ugly game, field position game. When you look at Wentz, the offensive line injuries from Minnesota, the Browns quarterback situation, I think this is a very close, low scoring game. I thought about taking the points with Gabriel, but I just think the under is a better way to go.
All right, let's stay in the National Football League and let's hit the Saints-Giants matchup. This is really interesting. You know, we're going to do our market power ratings coming up here after we get off the phone with you. And the Saints, they have been, by the market, upgraded, rightfully so. And this is a really interesting spot against the Giants coming off of a win with their own rookie quarterback, Jackson Dart. What do you see here?
I like the Saints. We can lay the 1.5. The money line's not too cheap at $1.20 or so. Course shop around, but I just think this is, again, I was on the Giants last week, a rare winner for me, the way this year NFL has gone, but I think this is a spot to fade them. First off, no neighbors, rookie quarterback on the road, making his first start on the road. The dome is pretty loud there in New Orleans. If you look at New Orleans, you think, all right, they're 0-4 and they got buried by Seattle. That's the first blink test people think when they hear the Saints. They were right in the game last week with the Bills, right in the game against the Cardinals, the 49ers. They've been really, really competitive. I don't think they've been that bad defensively. Rattler has shown you something. So to me, the Giants with no neighbors, rookie quarterback on the road, coming off their first win, I think this is actually a spot to back the Saints. I think the Saints win the game.
Yeah, it's a side I'm really conflicted on. I did tease the Giants up, but to your point, you go back and make the case. Go look at what happened to that Seahawks game. That was all a litany of errors on this special teams. From a down-to-down basis, the Saints team was actually not that bad. The blowout came courtesy of returned kicks, blocked kicks, all sorts of things that went really wrong for New Orleans in that facet of the game. All right, let's keep going. Will Hill with us again, at Not The Will Hill. Check out the Should Have Bet More podcast, now part of the VSiN family, wherever you get your podcasts. Denver and Philadelphia, or as I like to call them, this year's Kansas City Chiefs. Can they continue to win these one-score games, Will, despite the fact that every metric is pointing to Philly not being a legitimate team? What do we got?
I like the under. I would opt towards the points, too, but at some point you just get afraid to step in front of this team that just seems to have a horseshoe wherever you need to have the horseshoe this year with Philly, as you mentioned. I like the under. Both these defenses are top six in success rate. Hurts and the offense for Philly has just not looked good. They haven't been explosive. Barkley hasn't looked like the same player. He hasn't been explosive. The passing game just isn't there. And then Knicks on the Denver side has been really up and down. So I think, again, you probably get a more conservative game plan from both teams, a lot of running the ball. Peyton can be a little bit conservative in terms of his game management. So, 23-20 keeps you under that 43.5. I do think it's a lower scoring game, 23-20, 20-17, something like that. I like the under 43.5.
All right, we switch to college here. Let's talk about big revenge spot in the SEC. Alabama taking on undefeated Vanderbilt. If there was a loss in this matchup in the early season going, you would have thought it was on one side, not the one that it's on right now. Vandy's catching 10.5. What do we make of Diego Pavia, underdog, hitting the road, taking on a Bama team in a bad spot, but looking out for revenge against a team that beat him last year?
Yeah, it's an interesting spot, to say the least. I love this matchup just from a fan standpoint. And I actually think it's going to be a fun game, a competitive game. I am going to take the points. I understand it's not an ideal spot, even though Bama's coming off Georgia. You have the revenge from last year, which you look back, that ultimately cost Bama a playoff spot, because if they have two losses, they're getting in. But I just think Vandy can keep up offensively. You always worry, hey, it's Vandy versus Bama. Can they protect? Can they block them? I think they can. I think Vandy's really good on the offensive line. I think they got a pro tight end. Pavia, to me, is the real deal. I mean, this is a game where if they win this, you start to have real conversations. Can Vandy actually be a playoff team, which is just hard to believe, hard to even say out loud. But getting the 10.5, the back door is open. I think this is a shootout. I would lean towards an over. Of course, I worry a little bit, can Vandy get stops? But I think, look, all the trends with DeBoer, who has already lost 4 games in his 17 as a double-digit favorite. He's been bad as a favorite. Pavia's been great as a dog, 10-2. Against the spread, a bunch of outright wins, a bunch of road wins. I think this comes down to the wire. I like Vandy plus the points.
So you think legitimately Vandy could win this game? Because I threw this out to Stormy earlier this week. You know, if you're in the mindset that the Commodores can pull this off and get another upset over Alabama, I know the odds have shrunk tremendously, but are we not putting a little on Diego Pavia at 17-1 to win the Heisman?
I don't think that's crazy. I don't think they'll ultimately win the game, but I wouldn't be shocked. Yes, I think they could win. I actually do think they could win, and I don't think Pavia and Heisman is, like, the worst that you could make.
Yep. It's also, if they lose in a shootout, let's say a 3 or 4 point game, and he performs well, you still have a pretty good thing on your resume in terms of putting up some numbers against Alabama. All right, again, not the Will Hill, William Hill with us. Let's talk a little bit about a sneaky spot for Illinois. You can explain the schedule to our audience, where they're at, and why they might trip up here against Barry Odom and the Purdue Boilermakers.
Yeah, I like Purdue. You're getting the 9.5, so if you feel the need to wait, think you might get a 10, I can understand that, because obviously 10's a key-ish number. I was on with you last week. I gave out Illinois plus the points. They end up winning the game. I'm going against them this week. I just thought last week was a good spot. You know, USC, West Coast team, playing a 9 a.m. body clock kickoff to travel. You know, Illinois coming off the loss. It was a perfect spot. To me, this is a bad spot. Coming off an upset win, it's the exact opposite, where they're coming off the big win. They've been very fortunate. +5 in the turnover category so far this season. Even last year when Purdue was a disaster, Purdue had them beat. I think it was a 51-50 or 50-49, just a crazy game. Yep. And Purdue is much improved. Odom is a good coach. I think this is like, you know, tie game, 3-point game with 5 minutes to go. I think Purdue is going to be right in this game. I really like Purdue plus the 9.5.
All right, what about Notre Dame? I think that you were on the team total over last week against Arkansas, if I remember correctly. You're going back to the well here against Boise?
I do. 41.5. I just don't know how Boise gets stopped. This is a Boise team that, again, and they haven't played anybody. They haven't played a hard schedule at all outside of South Florida, a lot of Eastern Washington and App State. But they gave up 507 yards to Air Force. They gave up 7 yards per play, including a lot through the air. I just think Notre Dame can name their score here. I think Notre Dame can basically score every time they touch the ball. And I think Notre Dame is still not good enough defensively where they'll probably have to keep the foot on the gas. And if you want to think about, hey, style points and down the road, you want to have impressive victories, they probably have the motivation to put up, you know, 49, 50-plus points just to look good, just because they need every edge they can if it ends up being a 10-2 Notre Dame team. So Boise stinks on defense. Notre Dame is a machine on offense. I think they basically score at will here. I like the Notre Dame team total over that 41.5.
All right, before we get you out of here, I know we've run through your plays. You can find them all up at VSiN.com as well. Should ask you about some of the big ones, just get your general thoughts. Do you have anything in your mind at all about what Miami has in store for Florida State coming off of that loss to Virginia?
I would only take Florida State. It feels like Cristobal is going to have one of these games where he just gets too cute with the game management or screws it up somehow. Beck, if you look at Georgia last year, he was not as good on the road as he was at home. That Florida State destruction of Alabama, not destruction, but win against Alabama week one looks even better. I would only look towards the Noles off a little extra rest, off a loss, getting the points here.
All right. Will, we appreciate a couple of minutes. You see there, if you're watching up at VSiN.com, all of Will Hill's bets. You can follow him up on Twitter at NotTheWillHill. Thanks a lot, man. Get everything done today, all right?
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Yep, you got it again via the Progressive guest line. Will Hill, Should Have Bet More podcast, now part of the VSiN podcast family. Minnesota, Cleveland under 36. Saints money line play for Will. Denver, Philly under 43.5. Vanderbilt plus 10.5. Purdue plus 9.5. And then Notre Dame team total over in that matchup against Boise State. We'll have more coming up on college football in the second hour. We'll go through the Friday slate. Good couple of Mountain West contests, as well as some others that we're going to get into, including South Florida, as they continue to try to get their path on to the college football playoff. But the NFL season, of course, rolling on, and every snap brings new opportunities. Make sure you got the edge with VSiN Pro, folks. Right now, you can save 40% on our football season special with the Money Moves promo code MONEY. You'll get VSiN Pro access to everything we do across every sport from now through the Super Bowl. Remember, it's every sport. NBA guides on the way out. NHL stuff is up at the website as well. College basketball will be out as well. So make sure you check that out, plus the daily best bets, the betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video, and more. Don't wait. Lock in 40% off promo code MONEY. VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code MONEY.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, I'm fired up. I'm excited. We'll have our second hour coming up here in about 15 minutes. We'll get to the college football games coming up for a Friday night. We'll also have a look across the pond. Chris Vasili is going to be with us from Covers.com. Get some thoughts. Very big matchup for Chelsea this coming weekend. The Blues have been struggling a little bit here, but we'll see if they can turn things around, coming off of a loss to Brighton over the weekend. But getting a win in the Champions League during the week. But let's start with the National Football League. We're going to get to our market power ratings coming up here in a little bit. But before we do get to those, I do want to mention some injury news that we have seen come down in about the last hour or so. First of which is, let's start with the Las Vegas Raiders, because we did get some footage today. Not blurry, you know, grainy, Zapruder film type footage. Brock Bowers, not in uniform. He is out again at practice today for the Las Vegas Raiders. Looks like this is the second straight day for him. He's been battling some knee injuries, so this is going to be a small issue for the Raiders, as they have to make the trek to go take on the Indianapolis Colts as 7-point underdogs there. But it looks like Brock Bowers not going to be available. Big blow for me. Really liked for the year Brock Purdy over 1,000 receiving yards, and if he's going to continue to miss time, he is going probably not going to achieve that mark. The Giants have officially said that running back Tyrone Tracy and defensive lineman, this one's pretty big, Dexter Lawrence, are questionable. Now, Lawrence has an illness, so one would assume that on Friday you could overcome whatever it is by the time you get to Sunday. It's still worth noting that Tracy and Dexter Lawrence are questionable to play this coming weekend against the New Orleans Saints, a game in which they are underdog. We will get to that momentarily, because that is going to be a very, very interesting game. Couple of officially ruled out pieces for some of these games. Chuba Hubbard officially out for the Panthers against the Miami Dolphins. I mentioned the Colts. This is a little bit further down the list. We kind of knew these already. Tyler Goodson in the backfield, Alec Pierce, Kenny Moore, Daniel Scott out. Kenny Moore is the one that looms the largest, because remember, Xavier Howard retired during the week. So now you have two guys in that secondary that are out. Not really a surprise there. It's just a thin secondary for Indianapolis, and one that has struggled to this point of the year. And the Buccaneers have officially ruled out Bucky Irving for Sunday's game against Seattle. And then we know the other one's already out. Mike Evans, Benjamin Morrison, Jamel Dean, Christian Eisen, and of course, all out for Sunday's matchup against the Seattle Seahawks. So with that, let's tie into our market power ratings for this week. We do have, for those with us, a new bottom-tiered team in the power rankings after power ratings after last week. Drum roll, please, if you will. It is the Tennessee Titans as our lowest power-rated team there. If you're watching up at VSiN.com, YouTube TV, you see it. Tennessee Titans on the 72 line, 2.5 points behind the Carolina Panthers. So I did want to reiterate, as we leave these up here today, as I did get a tweet, Lockman at SBO Picks wanted to know, how do we understand these power ratings? So let's give this one more try here with the explanation. We should do this every week. These are not mine. These are essentially how the betting market views these teams. We derive these market power ratings from looking at where the current numbers are in the market, calculating for home field, and putting them on this scale to find out where these teams are in terms of a power rating standpoint. And this is what the market thinks of this. This is how these lines have been bet. And so you see where these teams stand with one another. So let's use the obvious example here. Let's stay with the Tennessee Titans, because they're at the very bottom line. You can see where they're at this point right now. So the Tennessee Titans, bottom-rated team in the National Football League. Titans, of course, taking on the Arizona Cardinals this week. Well, the Cardinals will use the consensus number of about 7.5. Cardinals, 7.5 points. Well, home field advantage worth 1.5 points when we use these market power ratings. So what would that mean? That would mean that there is a difference of 6 points between the Arizona Cardinals and the Tennessee Titans. You see the Cardinals up there on the 78 line. There's a 6-point difference between those two, and thus you get the point spread of 7.5 when the Cardinals are playing at home. So this is what these teams think. Now, you could say, all right, well, John, I don't think the Titans should be that low. If you want to move the Titans up in these power ratings, you then have to move the Cardinals up, because these ratings are derived from the lines that we are using in the market right now. So because they're playing each other, if we move the Titans up to, let's say, the 74.5 line, that means we would have to upgrade the Cardinals by 2.5 points as well. And would you say that the Cardinals are equals to the Jags and the Vikings, or near equals to the Buccaneers and Patriots? I would say that is not the case. So that is something you have to keep in mind. But if you do think the Titans are too low, well, then that means you like the Titans plus 7.5 here in the spot against the Cardinals. And that's what I would say when you look at a matchup like that. So our Titans are now our lowest rated team in the National Football League. Let's focus on a couple of games, though, and a couple of teams that I think, to me, I cannot wait to see how these games play out. I also can't wait to see the market and where they're at and whether if they're right or not. But let's go to New Orleans, where the Saints are going to take on the New York Giants. So if you go back to last week, the New York Giants, from a power rating standpoint, were floating around the 77 line in terms of a power rating, okay? As we know, last week, Giants were taking on the Los Angeles Chargers. They end up getting that done. Our market power ratings for last week had the Giants with Dart on the 77 line last week. Well, this week, if we're using 1.5 for this home field, as we have been throughout, and if you're wondering what has been going on with home field, home teams are up by about 10 in terms of 500, the record, 10 games over 500. Median result at home is floating around 2 points. So we're still in line with using 1.5 points for home field advantage right now. But if you look at this from this perspective, here at Draft, or excuse me, this is courtesy of DraftKings, right? So we have our game board here. DraftKings would tell you that this is a 1.5 point spread. So that would tell you that these two teams are equals to one another. Betting market is not that far off. There's a smattering of twos, bunch of 1.5s. So the market is telling you that there is either these teams are equal to one another, or that the Saints are maybe a 0.5 point better. Well, the Saints last week were the lowest rated team in the National Football League. But as Will Hill has mentioned, and as we have mentioned on this program, despite the fact that they covered for the first time this last week against the Buffalo Bills, this team has been better on like a down-to-down basis. The first 2 weeks with the ball in Spencer Rattler's hand and the ability to upend both Arizona and, of course, San Francisco, pushing Buffalo the way that it did to the point where there was a touchdown called off late. And, of course, that would have been a lead-changing touchdown against Buffalo in the fourth quarter. This team has been much better, and this team has finally really been upgraded to the point where this week, if you look, the New Orleans Saints find themselves on the 77 line. I mean, I don't know where you want to put them because, again, the Giants last week were on the 77 line, and they won outright as a 6.5 point underdog. You can't really downgrade them too much, so they're going to float in this range, which means we have to pull the Saints up from where they were last week. That, to me, I know it's an ugly game between two teams we don't care about, but from a market standpoint, from a rating dynamic, this is so interesting to see where the Saints have come from the first few weeks of the season, showing some fight, covering against Buffalo, maybe potentially pulling the upset, to where they're at this week against the New York Giants, and, of course, Jackson Dart and others making their first start, Jackson Dart specifically, making his first start on the road as a rookie quarterback. All right, so with that in mind, let's go to a couple of other teams. Let's look at the 76.5 line, if you will. That puts us with a litany of AFC North teams. Cincinnati Bengals last week, we had discussed this. I had bet the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday night, plus 7.5. Thought the market was a little too low. No way the Bengals are this bad. What are we doing? Well, the Bengals were that bad, and the Ravens get knocked down to their line as well. We know that no Lamar Jackson is not going to play, as you see it noted here on the graphic. We should also note, though, that I don't think this move is entirely just Lamar Jackson, because remember last week the Ravens were on the 86 line, probably going to be downgraded this week after that loss, specifically the way this defense has looked. But remember, there is all of these injuries on defense for Baltimore. So I think some of this and a majority of this is Lamar Jackson not playing. But this is also all of these pieces for the Ravens not being available, which is why Baltimore has been downgraded to the degree to which it has. They are taking on the Tennessee Titans. Well, Titans right now are about a 2-point favorite. That would show you that there's about a 3.5-point difference between this Ravens team and this Texans team on a neutral at this point right now, given their current construction. I think you could probably quibble with the Ravens being that low if you're going to be a little bit healthier on defense, but it doesn't sound like that from practice standpoint. And for the Texans, a team that got their first cover last week against the Titans that looked abysmal on offense now finds himself as a road favorite against this Ravens team that has been just decimated with injuries right now. Let's look at a couple of other spots because, again, we have these games, some of these interesting spots for some of these teams. I think the other one that is very much worth focusing on this point right now is the fall, not only for Cincinnati, but the rise now for Detroit and where this Lions team finds itself. Lions are starting to creep back up. If you remember after week one when they went out and they lost to the Green Bay Packers, the Lions did get downgraded to an extent. Going into week one, Lions were near equals with the Green Bay Packers. After the loss, Lions got knocked down to about the 82-83 line. Now here they are back up, equals on a neutral with the Chiefs and Eagles, and of course the Bengals all the way down there. But I'll say this as we wrap up on it. The Bills are our highest rated team again this week. I think that there is a real issue with this Bills team defensively. We know how injured they are. We're not really talking about them in that regard as we are with the Baltimore Ravens. But if the Patriots pull this off, and they seem to have a very popular backing at the window this weekend, I'd be curious to see where we are with the highest power-rated team this next week in our market power ratings. First Bet and VSiN have teamed up with a special offer. Open a deposit into a new First Bet account and get up to a $250 sign-up bonus with the promo code VSiN250. Then place $100 in wagers within your first 30 days, and you'll unlock a full year of VSiN Pro $240 value. If you're already a subscriber, we're going to extend your subscription another year. How about that? Offer ends Sunday, October 5th. You only got a couple of days, so don't wait. For more information, go to first.com/VSiN. 1st.com/VSIN. When we come back, we get to the Friday slate of college football. It is all downhill for one of these teams. Will it continue the slide? We'll find out.